Please rise for the prayer by our chaplain, Pastor Gok, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag.
From the first chapter of Proverbs, we hear, "Let the wise also hear and gain in learning, and the discerning acquire skills." Blessed Lord, we give you thanks for the long history of the Senate. As we walk the halls and see those who have gone before us, we recognize we can learn from them and acquire the skills to do better as we hold the reins of responsibility and face our challenges and opportunities to serve this state. So keep us on the path that follows the way you would have each of us take, and working together, reach the goals that you have set for this Senate. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown, Callahan, Chappelle Nadal, Crowell, Cunningham, Curls, Dempsey, Dixon, Engler, Goodman, Green, Justice, Kevany, Kehoe, Kraus, Lager, Lamping, Lemke, Mayer, McKenna, Munslinger, Nieves, Parson, Pierce, Pergeson, Richard, Ridgway, Roop, Schaff, Schaefer, Schmidt, Stouffer, Wasson, Wright Jones.
Senator from Phelps. Senator from St. Francois. Senator from Cape Girardeau. A quorum is present. The Senate is in session. Read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, second regular session.
Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion it shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Reading is dispensed with. Introduction of guests. Senator from Phelps.
Mr. President, I'd like to introduce a very special guest. On my left, your right, Dr. Jeffrey Kerr from Rolla, Missouri. Been a good friend for many, many years. Does a fantastic job, helps a lot of people. Please make him feel welcome today.
Delighted to welcome the guest of the Senator from Phelps and my good friend, gerontologist, Dr. Jeffrey Kerr, to the Missouri Senate. Senator from the 2nd.
President, I have some very special guests. On your, my left and your right, Mr. President, I have three lovely ladies from St. Charles County. I got Susan Parker, Susan Newton, and Bethany Moats that are up. They represent People First of St. Charles, a fantastic organization that is out trying to get awareness and rights for all those in our community. So I'd like to welcome my friends, Susan, and Bethany.
Will the guests of the Senator from the 2nd please rise for recognition by the Senate? Senator from 7th.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a special guest to introduce. His name is Dr. Ramis Geif. Dr. Geif is our doctor for the day, so we thank him for that service. He's from Town and Country, anesthesiologist with the SSM Group. Welcome, Dr. Geif.
Senator, we're delighted to welcome the doctor of the day to the Missouri Senate. Well covered on health care today with at least two physicians in the House, in the Senate. Senator from Stoddard.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have some special guests. They are pursuing careers in the healthcare field, and they are with SEMO Area Health Education Center. They're seated here in the lower gallery to my left, to your right. They are Cindy Robinette, Ashley Murphy, Laura Glick, Kristen Alexander, and Mary Fielder. I'd like for the body to welcome them.
Let's welcome the guests of the Senator from Stoddard from Southeast Missouri. Please rise. Introductions. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances, resolutions, concurrent resolutions, introduction of bills. Senator from St. Francois.
Mr. President, I have a bill.
Send it forward, sir. Read the bill of the Senator from St. Francois.
Senate Bill 756, introduced by Senator Engler, an act relating to retirement of education employees.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, this is to stabilize particularly the professors that are mobile on their pension plan, and hopefully it will help. Mr. President, could I inquire the Senator from the 12th?
Does the Senator from the 12th yield for inquiry? Proceed.
This has got to be a big day for you, Senator. The presidential primary that you advocated for is here. It's upon us. It's almost like Super Bowl Sunday for you. It's got to be. You probably couldn't sleep last night.
I slept well, but it is a big day. I mean, the voters of the state actually get to go out and cast their vote on who they believe the presidential candidate could be. Unfortunately, as you and I both know, because of some rule changes at the party, the unfortunate reality is that this vote will actually we'll actually see if how the vote turns out today and how the caucuses turn out if they
why do you care how the vote will turn out today?
What's that?
Are you pulling for the former governor from New Mexico or
yeah, you know, I strongly believe, as I advocated on this floor last session, as I advocated during special session, I actually believe that we should listen to the people and that this process is not about 34 senators in this room or a bunch of people over at MRP or the Democrat Party, that the actual people should make these decisions. And I actually think, just as I decided or just as I said before, if right now that this primary mattered, like if the party had not changed the rules, the reality is that when every one of these candidates left Florida,
but they already changed came the here. Rules, Senator, when we
so
voted
that,
on
that's
it.
The unfortunate
they
part.
They changed the rules when we voted on it, Senator. And what my constituents want to know, why we're spending $6.5 to $7 million on this beauty contest today. I know you're excited about it, well, but what should I tell them?
You tell them that we still believe that the voters of this state, the citizens of this state, that is who actually should make this decision.
Really?
Not 34 people or not a couple of folks at the state party.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah, after you know
your cynical process,
I can't wait for the budget.
Your cynical process,
I can't wait for the budget to talk about things that we're going to cut out because of this election today. It's a wonderful day in the state of Missouri where we're going to vote and spend $6.5 million on absolutely nothing. I know you're trying to justify. Please continue on because I have not gotten that message to send back to my constituents wondering why we're wasting $6.5 million today.
You know, I cannot believe that that's the debate we're having, that we are going to allow the people of this state to go to the ballot box and share with their elected officials where they believe, who they believe the leaders of this are, and somehow it's become a waste of money. I mean, that is actually insulting.
You're saying you don't think
no,
it's a waste of money today.
No, it's insulting, Senator. Let's be honest about it.
You don't want,
it
I want you on record.
That
this
you stand
is not
here and
a waste
say,
of money today.
It is
to have an election
to the
that
people of this
absolutely
state.
Nothing.
That you sit here today
this
and say that they should not
money,
have
Senator.
That vote.
I
that
think
is ridiculous.
The decide, and
that
I want
is
it on
absolutely
the
ridiculous.
That this is a waste of money, $6.5 to $7 million. Thank you, Senator, for the inquiry. Mr. President, can I inquire the Senator from Jefferson?
Does the Senator from Jefferson yield?
I guess so.
He yields, you may inquire.
Well, Senator, I was just looking at the vote that caused this.
I want to vote for Newt.
It would be great, but since he understood it didn't mean anything, he didn't put his name on the ballot. So it's kind of sad, but there's other people on there that it means nothing. You and the solid, I might mention, other seven minority members all voted to have this election today. I know you're worried a little bit about Obama and winning his primary today, but was there? Could you tell me why I could to go back to my constituents and tell them, the ones that are calling this morning, why they are voting today and why we're wasting $6.5 million?
You know, that's a good question, Senator.
All right. Thank you for the inquiry. I'll tell them that.
Mr.
President,
are we
could I inquire?
Really? We're finished?
Really? Yeah. Could I inquire the Senator from St. Charles, the senior Senator from St. Charles?
Does the Senator from St. Charles yield for the third inquiry on the introduction of a bill?
I do.
He yields, you may inquire.
I know you're excited about this bill I'm introducing, Senator.
I am so excited about this bill.
I remember back in the fall when we talked about after the state party, and I agree with the senator from the 12th, they shouldn't have done this. But after they decided...
Actually, the governor vetoed the bill that had this whole thing in it.
Him.
So we wouldn't even be here if the governor had just signed the bill that was passed by the Senate and the House, the truly elected people of the state of Missouri.
Just so that he could appoint people if the state office holders would resign for any reason,
right?
Then that's the reason he vetoed it, and that's why we're spending $6.5 million
today. That is true. That's the crux of it.
But I remember in the fall, you came up with a whole list of things that we're going to have to cut probably now.
I think that list has grown. After we've seen some of the numbers and stuff since back then, that list has grown to all the different things that are probably going to have to be reduced.
Well, I didn't want this historic day to go by that I can't wait to get home tonight and watch the news to see if Herman Cain pulled it out or not, that we spent $6.5 million on today's interesting election. Now, do I agree that the people should be heard? Yes, but some of the things that you talked about that we're probably going to have to cut.
Oh, yeah, there was things, the waiting list for the developmentally disabled, transportation for school districts. I mean, you can go down. I'm sure every senator in here has a program or some type of thing that is very, very key to their heart that probably is going to, unfortunately, have to be looked at being eliminated or something. And I know the senator from Boone has a very tough job ahead of him to do that. But, $6.5 million, $7.5 million, $8.5 million, $9.5 million, depending on whatever that dollar amount comes in is what's being, my phone's ringing off the hook. I got people calling in irate. There was actually even almost a fight in the barber shop in Lincoln County yesterday of two people
seen one of those
trying
tell
to figure out what's going on, why are we doing that, and
the
barber called his state representative from one party, and he was told it was all the Republicans' fault. So then the client called our office, and we walked him through the whole process and said, this is how we got here.
My county chair was at the front page of the paper on Saturday saying the state party did relent and are going to award some of the delegates to today's vote.
Oh, wow. Of course, I didn't know that.
My county party chairman for the Republicans who ran as a Democrat in Reynolds County for prosecuting attorney is not the source of all knowledge, I'm finding out.
Yeah.
Because he had no clue, like usual. But, we talk about this, and I got the list of everybody, because we talked extensively on whether this was going to be a waste of money or not, and people decided whether to vote for it. I can feel in the room everyone that voted for this as I see some of them heading for the exits. a little bit inquiring why. I just wanted to point out that you did, prior to the knowledge, after we knew that this was not going to mean anything, you pointed out that their vote would cost all these things in the budget.
And there's a lot of people that don't even realize that it doesn't account for anything. So they're thinking that they did have their voice heard to select their presidential preference, and then they're not going to attend the caucus on the Republican side, which is the legitimate way to seat your delegates, is how it's been done. So they're thinking that they're actually affecting the seating of their delegates when they're not. So there's just a lot of mass confusion out there. So I appreciate you pointing this out and reminding people.
Well, I just wanted to, lest we forget, Senator, lest we forget. And I've got some more that I'll probably talk to in the upcoming days or during the budget process.
But I think this bill that you're filing is a great bill.
Thank you.
The senator from Buchanan was seeking recognition.
Yeah, I'd like to inquire of the senator from the first, please.
Does the senator from the first yield for inquiry?
I yield.
He yields. You may inquire.
Thank you, Senator. And, I too appreciate the words of the senator from St. Francois about his concern that $6.5 million is being wasted. You know, I think he's got a valid point. On Thursday, I talked about with you about maybe even hundreds of millions of dollars being wasted. You remember that interchange?
I do recall that conversation, Senator. It had to do with the Medicaid budget, didn't it?
And you read anything about that in the paper over the weekends, in the last 5 days?
Any paper in particular?
Yeah, any in Missouri. Did you read anything?
Missouri?
I saw in Missouri Net, I think Bob Pretty kind of referred to it as there's some you know, misspending. But did you read
anything? He does fine work, doesn't he?
He does. But there was nothing else. I didn't see anything. I looked in Keeping Up and the John Combest and scanned. I didn't see anything.
I didn't either, Senator.
You have a committee, don't you?
What was that number that, you know, over the last number of years that...
5,200 people have been put on the Medicaid program that should not have been theoretically up to that number. And for 6 years, you know, these people have been put on the Medicaid program that didn't meet the spend down, and they should have paid in maybe on the order of $100 million. The department won't tell us how much. But my question is, do you have a committee, a special committee, to look into stuff like this?
I'm the chair of the Governmental Accountability Committee. Yes. These are the type of things we look at.
I would like here and now to ask you to look into this issue. And the reason is that apparently the media isn't going to do it. I mean, here we have a situation where thousands of people have been put on the Medicaid program that should not have been, according to our statute. And then, when they discovered they were doing this, they attempted to cover up, by changing, or by telling on the telephone their people to change how they're doing it, but not changing their manual, hoping that they wouldn't get caught. And then they got caught. They got caught doing this, and they decided to pause, which means to go back to breaking the law. So they're knowingly breaking the law. And the media isn't covering this. I mean, I'm incredulous.
And it's roughly $100 million estimated over what period of time?
Well, I don't know how much it is. I mean, it's the amount of spend down that they were forgiven and that they should have paid. And here we have the interim director of the department saying that they knowingly are continuing to put people who don't qualify for Medicaid onto the program, and they won't tell us how much it costs. They won't tell us how much we're going to owe the federal government in back pay, since the federal government foots two-thirds of the bill or more. And they are saying that they won't promulgate rules that every lawyer that I've talked to and every other senator in the room agrees the law requires them to do. And the media has not reported on this, so I'm asking you, will you please look into this?
I will. I will actually request of the pro tem of the Senate that our committee have the ability to look into this issue, because at the same time that this policy was being forwarded by the department, you know, we're cutting higher education, you know, 3 years in a row, and in this budget year, over 12% is what the governor's cut to higher ed. And at the same time, we're wasting money or spending money over here on another item, you know, that we should not be spending.
You know, I wouldn't mind. I am just outraged that the department feels that they can just ignore the law. Well, they said that they're not going to apply the correct rules until May. In other words, we don't have to follow the law at the Department of Social Services. We don't have to because we don't want to. We want to go ahead and let 5,000 people, you know, qualify for Medicaid as we have been. And we don't want to follow the law, so we don't have to. Where did that enter into their thinking?
Well, good. Again, Senator, our responsibility is not only setting the priorities, but to be an oversight component to how the people's money is being spent. So if the law is not being followed, you know, it's our business, you know, to look into that and investigate. And I give you my commitment here today that will get on my committee's list.
Please do it, because, you know, it is our job to oversee if the media doesn't do their job. And I'm going to also ask the media, please do your job and report on this. Misappropriation of state funds, cover up. I mean, it's got everything that should make an excellent story. And it's important because there are tens, if not hundreds, of millions of dollars that have been misappropriated, misused, whatever. I mean, it dwarfs the 6.5 million that we're spending on this election today. Thank you for your inquiry, Senator.
Thank you, Senator.
Further introduction of bills. The senator from the 2nd District in St. Charles County.
I actually have a bill.
Send it forward.
Well, technically it's a resolution, but this is the proper time of which I should be sending them forward, according to the Secretary of the Senate.
Secretary Reed, the resolution.
Senate Joint Resolution 49, a joint resolution relating to providing religious conscious protections for individuals and organizations, introduced by Senator Roop.
Senator, do you care to explain that resolution?
President, I think everyone's probably aware, especially if you're a member of the Catholic religion, especially after the bishops kind of stood up and drew their line in the sand after the Obama administration kind of forced upon them something that is very much against their religious beliefs and many beliefs of the Catholic Church on religious liberty, which I think is probably the biggest affront to religious liberty in our nation's history. So what this would actually do, Mr. President, it would be a constitutional amendment that would go in the Bill of Rights that would simply say that no federal law or mandate or whatever would force any religious organization such as the Catholic Church to go against things of which they hold morally repugnant. So I just think that it's time for the people of Missouri to put in the Bill of Rights one of the basic rights that we have always had in this country until it was pretty much spat upon by the federal government in the last several weeks. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further introduction of bills. Senator from Christian was first on his feet.
Mr. President.
Send them forward. Read the bills.
Senate Bill 757, introduced by Senator Wasson, an act relating to limited licenses for funeral directing.
You care to explain that bill, Senator?
No explanation.
Secretary, read the second bill.
Senate Bill 758, introduced by Senator Wasson, an act relating to child abuse and neglect.
Care to explain that bill, Senator?
No explanation. Thank you.
Further introduction of bills. Senator from Grundy.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a bill.
Send it forward.
It is on its way forward. It was now being delivered to the very capable and competent Secretary of the Senate.
Would said secretary read that bill?
Senate Bill 759, introduced by Senator Lager, an act relating to renewable energy.
Care to explain that bill?
Thank you, Mr. President. As we continue to work through the challenges in Prop C, this bill is a vehicle by which hopefully we can resolve those issues here so that we not have to go back to a vote of the people in round two. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further introduction of bills, the senator from the 23rd District in St. Charles County.
I have a bill.
Send that bill forward. Secretary, read the bill.
Senate Bill 760, introduced by Senator Dempsey, an act relating to hunting accidents.
Care to explain that bill, Senator?
Thank you, Mr. President. A few years ago, I filed this bill. Had a constituent whose husband was shot and killed at 10 yards because of someone who just was extremely irresponsible. And that person has received, no suspension or serious effects related to their hunting privileges. And it's a shame. She suffered a terrible loss, and I filed this legislation on her behalf and hope to make some changes so that there's more accountability. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further introduction of bills. The senator from the 4th District in the city of St. Louis.
Mr. President, I have two bills.
Send those bills forward. Secretary Reed, the first bill.
Senate Bill 761, introduced by Senator Kevany, an act relating to trust protectors.
No explanation.
Read the second bill.
Senate Bill 762, introduced by Senator Kevany, An act relating to alternative educational procedures for charter schools.
Here to explain that bill, Senator.
Yes, Mr. President, this bill sets up a charter school program for alternative education for kids at risk.
Further introduction of bills. Senator from Cole County, what reason do you
recommend? Mr. President, I have a bill.
Send that bill forward, Senator.
Sent forward.
Secretary, read the bill from the Senator from Cole.
Senate Bill 763, introduced by Senator Kehoe. An act relating to the release of a lien on encumbrance from a certificate of ownership.
Care to explain that bill, Senator?
No explanation needed.
Further introduction of bills. Senator from the 23rd District. The junior senator from St. Charles.
Mr. President, I finally found a mic cord suitable for a man of your stature. Mr. President, without objection, unless there's any other further debate on introduction of bills, I will go to Senate Bills for Perfection, the informal calendar, Senate Bill 469.
Senate Bill 469 and the Senate Bills for Perfection calendar, informal calendar, the senator from Greene County, that is your bill.
Mr. President, I move that Senate Bill 469 be brought before the body. I believe there's a Senate substitute with an amendment pending.
You've heard the motion from the senator from Greene. All those of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those of the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before the body. The amendment pending currently is from the senator from Cape. You are recognized.
Mr. President, to inquire the senator from Andrew.
Senator from Andrew, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
You were just wanting recognition. So.
Yeah, I'm actually going to inquire the senator from Boone here at some point. We're going to pick back up on this discussion on the okay. presidential primary today.
And
it's far from over. I would say block your calendars for the morning because there's a I don't even remember, Senator, where you are, but I find it ironic that the sheer arrogance of elected officials to think that we can't spend $6 million to go and let the people have their will be put forward. I mean, this is easily fixed. The parties could have said, listen, this primary is going to matter.
Yeah.
I mean, I find it mind-boggling that in all the things that we debate up here, all the things that we do, the area that we think we ought to cut is letting the people have their will be known.
Yeah.
It's
No, I'm with you. And so the record is clear. I voted for the senator from, where's Krause from? Where is he from? Jackson. I voted for the senator from the 8th original bill. You know, legislation often has compromises in it. I voted because it got rid of some election days. That bill was vetoed by the governor.
Right.
Then, all of a sudden, the governor added it to the special session. The special session had its own challenges and had its own issues relative to tax credits, tax credit reform, authorizations. But then we also had this issue of whether or not we were going to kowtow to the Republican establishment and the Republican Party that said it's more important to have good hotel room reservations in Tampa and to send the elites to Tampa than it is to actually stand up as a state like Florida did. Senator, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, what happened in Florida during Florida's primary, whether you support Romney or whether you support Gingrich, what happened in the state of Florida by having all of those presidential candidates come to their state was a good thing. Now, the senator from St. Francis would have you to believe that that was a bad thing, that actually the good thing is his bill that he couldn't get passed. And I will tell you, I was not here. I came into our caucus. I expressed my sincere dissatisfaction with the way that special session was led and handled, how they ran it into my wedding, how they ran it into the period in between my marriage and my honeymoon, how I worked with the senator from St. Charles on a small one-day window between when my wife and I got married and my wife and I were leaving to go on our honeymoon. I came up here. I was informed that we were not going back to the tax credit debate, and then I said, I'm going home to get ready to leave for my honeymoon. That's why I wasn't here to vote. I don't know where anyone else is, but my understanding was that there was much debate and much talk about it, and the senator from St. Francis couldn't get his bill passed.
You know what I...
And I'm here to tell you, I'm glad. What should have happened in all of this is those elitists in the Republican Party and those that do the party's bidding at the expense of their constituents and at the expense of the state of Missouri, they should be defeated on this Senate floor. They should be defeated each and every time that they put special interests, whether it be the Republican Party, of which I have an R after the end of my name and feel very comfortable in saying that the decisions of this Republican Party to nullify the presidential primary and putting their abilities to go to Tampa above actually having a voice in the selection of the next president, as Florida did, is just wrong.
I mean, I want everyone to stop and think about this for a minute. If you watch what happened in Iowa, in New Hampshire, in South Carolina, and then recently in Florida, all the presidential candidates came to those states, and you know what they did? Old-fashioned politics, Senator. They actually went and met people in coffee shops. They actually had events where real people that do not get involved in politics every day, where they had the opportunity to go meet those candidates. That's the way it's supposed to work. And what we all know is that Missouri is a microcosm of this country. You know, outside of the last election cycle, Missouri has historically been with the president. The fact that presidential candidates do not come here is the fault of one group right now. For this cycle, anyway, it's not this body here. It's the folks over at the parties. They made a decision that the will of the people of this state is not going to prevail. And we can have financial debates all you want, but at some point, you've got to have a fundamental understanding, and everyone in this room has a fundamental feeling of some kind. You either believe that the people speaking matters, or you believe they don't. You either believe that we as legislators are smarter than everyone else, and so the party should go cut these little side deals, or you actually believe that when the voters speak, that's what elected officials are supposed to do. I actually believe that. And the mere fact that we are having to listen to the arrogance that was articulated on this floor earlier, that we should be ashamed that the voters of this state get to have their will known on who the nominee should be for each party, is one of the most absurd things that I've heard during my decade in public office. It is the arrogance that has caused people to be so disgruntled with this process. And I would humbly submit that presidential candidates working the streets, working the communities, and actually meeting our constituents is a good thing. You know what? I don't know who's going to end up in the White House, but what I know is this. I want them to know what the real life is like in our state. I want them to understand what when my constituents get out of bed every day, what they have to go to provide for their families, to strengthen their communities, to try to move our state forward. And the mere fact that a bunch of people get to sit at the party and make this decision that I don't care what the people say, we're going to have caucuses because we're afraid of the repercussions of what might or might not happen, I think is absurd. And while I can have a respectable disagreement with my colleagues, and I understand that bill ultimately made it to the governor with me voting against it, that's okay. But I do not believe in any way, shape, or form that it is ever a waste of the taxpayers' money for the taxpayers to allow their will and their voice to be heard. And that's where I guess our fundamental difference is. Now, I believe, Senator, that our state and the parties in our state should have had the same fortitude that Florida did, to throw down the gauntlet and say, listen, we dare you to not see our delegates. I mean, let's be honest. How does this process work? I thought we are part of a country where the people tell the government what to do. But you know what's happening right now? The government, and even worse than that, the parties within the government are telling the people who's going to get a vote, when they're going to get a vote, and essentially who is going to pick the nominees for both the Republican and the Democrat ticket.
That is absurd, Senator. And I have had it. I've had it with this mentality. I've had it with this idea that we know best and the people should listen to us. No. The people know best. We are supposed to be here to advocate on their behalf. And I have hit my limit. I mean, let's not forget here, at the end of the day, it's supposed to be government by the people, for the people. Somehow we got lost in there, and it's become by a select few for the parties. And I'm sick of that, Senator.
I gave my explanation. I gave my views on all of this. I don't think that this is... I guess when bad things happen, somebody's got to be blamed. And if we're going to be in this blame game, I blame the Missouri Republican Party. You know, and that's how I shake out. I really don't care if anyone else agrees or disagrees okay. with me any more than they agree or disagree with me.
Senator, now, Senator, I understand that you need to...
I do. If I can, and then you can have the floor. I'm just... I've got something I need to take care of and then move on. So
if it's okay,
I respect
Senator,
where you're
when
at.
We end this inquiry, what I'd like to do real quick is the circuit clerks have just walked in. I'm going to do a quick introduction
okay.
of them, if that's okay.
Okay.
And then we'll dispose of your amendment so you can
okay.
proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Mr. President. Mr. President.
Mr. President. I've got the floor and I'm done.
Okay. The Senator from Gentry.
I would like to seek unanimous consent to introduce some guests.
Hearing no objection, proceed.
Off to my right and your left, a group of great folks who are down today advocating, walking the halls, sharing their concerns and their thoughts of what government should be doing and shouldn't be doing, are circuit clerks from throughout the state. And I would ask that the members of the Senate please join me in welcoming these wonderful individuals to the body of the Missouri State.
Let's welcome our circuit clerks as they visit us in the Senate here today. Senator from Phelps.
Unanimous consent to introduce special guest.
Hearing no objection, proceed.
One of those circuit clerks happens to be my sister-in-law, so I'd like for you to welcome her here today as well.
Welcome the sister-in-law of the Senator from Phelps. We're back on the amendment from the Senator from Cape.
Mr. President.
Does the Senator desire to be heard? The Senator from Cape, you have the floor.
Mr. President, I would ask that you send that amendment back. Mr. President, I have a new amendment. I would like to send that forward. It has been distributed. I would request a waiver of the reading for the benefit of the body.
The prior amendment will be sent back. Request for a waiver of the reading has been made and should be granted. Hearing no objection. Senator, do you care to explain the amendment that's being sent forward?
Yes, sir, Mr. President. For the benefit of the body, this ends in .08S. .08S. Because of the discussion that we had yesterday over the attorney's fees and how the state pays these attorney's fees, our brilliant staff at Senate Research came back and drafted a better amendment that gets to all attorney's fees, both those in and out of the legal expense fund. For the benefit of the body that listened to our inquiry with the senator from Boone, There is access to the legal expense fund in section 536.087 in statute. This amendment would eliminate in its entirety the state of Missouri paying these attorney's fees, whether it's through the legal expense fund or through 536.087, which is the contesting side of the administrative rules process. The side that the senator from Green is now bringing into is the promulgation or the failure to promulgate rules and whether or not we're going to allow attorney's fees to be paid by the taxpayers in that front. Now, I also was able to work with Dan and our appropriation staff. And Dan has provided me with some information as to what is requested this year by the department. And according to appropriation staff, we have never rejected any of these attorney's fees. They're put into the supplemental, and they're paid for a legitimate reason. It's because it's a court order. And the court has ordered us to pay these attorney's fees. And they come on the back end side of a supplemental request when they are asked for after a department loses a case and is ordered to pay attorney's fees pursuant to 536.087. Now, I have no ability to forecast, and I represent to the body, no ability to forecast whether we'll have greater or less attorney's fees if we start paying them on the promulgation contestation side of an administrative proceeding. Right now, I can tell you that in supplemental, the Department of Insurance has asked for $89,000 in these attorney's fees pursuant to judicial order or quasi-judicial order in section 536.087. That's what the Department of Insurance has requested. That's what the governor has sent the House in his supplemental. Public Safety has requested $5,500. DHS has requested $27,000. OA has requested $81,750. Another request by insurance is $5,000. Another request by insurance for the Missouri Dental Board is for $15,000, but then the governor added a governor's amendment, which I hope, even if my amendment goes down, I hope someone from the Appropriations Committee will ask why there's a governor's amendment within 14.115 of the insurance line item where the Department of Insurance asked for $15,000 in attorney's fees, but then the governor put forth a governor's amendment to pay attorney's fees dating back to 2010 in the amount of $51,984. So I don't know what's going on there, but that definitely begs an inquiry. The Department of Insurance has asked for $50,128 in Missouri Nursing Board attorney's fees. The administrative service attorney's fees, $38,000. Administrative service attorney's fees for DSS, $38,000. And Missouri Health Net administrative attorney's fees, $71,000 for DSS. Those are all in this year's supplemental. I didn't have enough time to go back to previous supplemental to see where we are. Remember, we've had more controversial cases that have been there in 536.087. We don't find them now. I'm just very curious to see if we start paying attorney's fees on both sides of the administrative process, what that could do to line items. And I just wanted to make two other points, and I'll renew my motion on this amendment. Yesterday there was discussion about how we're limiting attorney's fees to $75 an hour. For those in the body that are not attorneys, I'm going to share with you a little secret. Attorneys don't give a rip what you pay them by the hour, as long as they get to keep track of their hours. All right? If you normally bill $200 an hour, and all of a sudden you tell them you can only bill $75 an hour, what used to take that attorney an hour now takes that attorney 4 hours. He doesn't care. She doesn't care. I'm just speaking the truth that a lot of attorneys may not want you to know. But putting a $75 cap without a cap as to the hours that that individual can bill, what does it matter? It's a distinction without meaning. The other thing that I want to share with the body as it relates to this amendment and moving forward on this amendment is we have to pay the awards of these attorney's fees. My understanding in discussions with appropriation staff is simply this. We put in statute the request for a new supplemental appropriation. We base our supplemental appropriation upon those, but these are judicial or quasi-judicial orders. We have had this debate in this body before, and this body has said, if a judicial order is there, we don't want to create the constitutional crisis associated with not paying a judgment. It came directly with the now Attorney General, Chris Koster, the senator from the 13th and the senator from the 11th, when we lost a judicial case dealing with probation and parole, if you guys remember that probation and parole, and it was a heated argument. I voted with those that said we needed to pay this judicial judgment. And just so everyone understands, even if this amendment is defeated, I will still say that these attorney's fees have to be paid because they are a judicial or quasi-judicial order. With that being said, all I'm trying to do in this amendment is saying we're not paying your attorney's fees, whether it's through the legal expense fund, whether it's through this 536.087, or now, as the senator from Green has proposed on the content on the administrative hearing side on the promulgation or failure to promulgate rules. I don't want to rehash the debate that we had last year. I'm just looking for an up or down vote on this, and appreciate the body's indulgence on this. With that, Mr. President, I would move for the adoption of the amendment, renew my motion, answer any questions, heal the sick, feed the poor, all of that.
You've heard the motion from the senator from Cape. The senator from Stoddard was the first one on his feet. For what reason do you rise?
To inquire the senator from Cape Girardeau.
Senator from Cape, do you yield?
I yield.
He does proceed.
Thank you, Senator, and sure. I appreciate your research on some of these past fees that have been paid for attorney fees. Let me make certain that I'm clear.
Right.
The present supplemental budget for FY12, we have a request for $89,736.
I
think I've got the same thing that you've gotten.
Yeah.
Okay, it's my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, the rest of these are from 07, 08, 09, 10, and 11,
oh, I guess
and they have
right.
been paid.
I guess that is correct. Yeah,
yeah, I think you were saying that they were submitting that in the supplemental
so
this year, but
okay.
but these have already been paid in past years. So the only one
I misunderstood what Dan was saying.
The only one requested at this time is the one there on the FY12 supplemental.
In the supplemental, as I understand.
Right, $89,736. So all those others have already been paid that you
correct.
Mentioned earlier.
So we go back to 07 in the,
right.
the supplementals that
exactly.
have been paid
they
on
have.
The
536.087. That's correct.
Which is the part of the administrative hearing side that doesn't deal with promulgation of rules.
Right, so, that's the section that deals with rules are already in place and they negatively impact individuals
right.
or businesses, and so they bring the suit and so they pay those out. Now, Senator, and I'm not going to keep
sure.
you long because I know you get
sure.
some things. It's my understanding in the Senator from Green's bill that these fees for attorney fees and expenses should certain criteria or guidelines be met, will be paid out of the budget of the particular departments. Is that the way you see that? I'm talking about the appropriated money, and it will change. It's my understanding that no longer will these fees be paid out of a supplemental, but they'll actually have to be paid out of the budget that's been appropriated to these departments.
My understanding is that is his intent. On the and it's important on the administrative side that we have two things that are going over. You have one side that is on the promulgation or
yes.
failure to promulgate rules. That is my understanding that that is the intent of what he's trying to accomplish on that side. He is not changing in any way, shape, or form the other side of the administrative law cases, which is the hearing and the outcome of
this. So in practicality,
hearings.
What we would have, we would could still have a request in a supplemental under the
right.
chapter 536.087. We could
correct.
Still have
correct.
In the supplemental a request
correct.
To pay for attorney fees, but the other section that deals with the crafting or promulgation of rules, in other words, getting
correct.
Them up and going, started, in other words, they could be killed or the rules could be implemented at the very beginning, those costs would be paid out of the department's budget.
Well, that's, I think, the intent. I don't know if in practicality that's what will happen. What I think will happen is the core and the request items and the regular appropriations will just go up. I mean, at the end of the day, Whether you call it a supplemental, whether you go through the procedures of 536.087, whether they pay it out of the court, it's all the taxpayers' money.
Oh, yeah,
the
I would agree with
really
you on that.
The taxpayers really don't care if you spend their money in a supplemental, if you spend their money in the core, or you spend their money.
So let me make certain that I understand what you're saying. Yeah. You believe that if the Appropriations Committee and the budget process is completed and they decide to pay the $89,736.
I'm saying they have
that, to. Yeah, they have
the
to.
Judicial okay. Or quasi-judicial.
Sometimes, though, I think we've delayed it and paid it a year or two later.
We have done that. AT&T court judgments.
But what I'm asking you is you're saying that the Department interest. Of Insurance will come back to the Appropriations Definitely. Committee and ask for $89,736 more?
No. What I'm saying is the senator from Green's bill changes nothing on this. What I'm fearful of, and I'll be quite clear, we can have these dialogues. The nursing home industry, all right? Harvey Teitelbaum made a wonderful living suing and getting administrative hearings that how we pay nursing homes is basically set in these administrative rule processes through the promulgation or failure to promulgate rules. Pharma, on what is a pre-approved drug list, what is not a pre-approved drug list, they basically set through the contestation of the rules, procedures, and the settlement of lawsuits in moving forward. We haven't really done a whole lot of that, and now I have a real fear that what happens if we as taxpayers have to start paying the nursing home industry's lawyers because they don't like the way that we're doing a rebase on nursing homes. What happens if we as taxpayers
I mean, you're talking about big you're pharma. Talking about Senator on the new section that the Senator from
right.
Green is
Correct.
Promulgating.
Because I'm going to tell you that what'll happen, in my opinion, is ultimately you're going to have a determination of whether somebody is successful or not. What I think will happen, and this is my best estimated guess, in my judgment and experiences, ultimately will settle. We probably will not take cases all the way to trial. It's just not the reality in what happens. And then during that settlement, if the attorneys can start seeing, well, I have a right to get my fees paid here. The question is going to be, will the department go ahead and say, yeah, as part of the settlement, we'll go ahead and pay your fees on,
right.
on bringing all of these.
But I mean, the
challenges.
Way it's the way it's written there on chapter 2 and paragraph 2, you know, the fact finder, whether it's the judge or an administrative law judge, has to find that a state agency's statement of general applicability, which is the subject of the petition, should have been promulgated as a rule under this chapter. So if it's not found, why they're not
entitled.
Well,
but what I'm saying is there'll be a settlement.
You're saying it'll never get to the fact finder.
Exactly. It'll never have that. And then as part of an approved settlement plan, it'll have, well, if I took this all the way to trial, you were paying my attorney's fees, so pay my attorney's fees. Listen, Senator, I've got this going on right now, and I'll be very clear, something that makes me very nervous, and especially where this is at, and you're going to see it because it's in my neck of the woods. I have a Lutheran high school in Cape Girardeau that has started and has moved forward. The people that own the property to the left and the right of them found a whole lot of rock. And it's one of the best quarries that has been discovered in a long time in southeast Missouri. The problem is, in order to get to that rock, you got to blow it up. Now, I don't know if they did this when you were in school, but blowing dynamite up in the middle of the class hours isn't conducive to education or learning. So it has started massive amounts of litigation. And even legislation that has been proposed to deal with it. We are now in the settlement phase of where DNR is going to approve or not approve a quarry. The defending, if you will, school has got one of these attorneys that has challenged the rules, has challenged much of what's going on. And I assume through the legal expense fund, now that I know that these contestations can be done through the legal expense fund, he currently has presented a bill to DNR for $285,000. for experts, for charts, for graphs, for everything else. And he actually picked up the phone and he called me and said, hey, I know this is in your district. I'm trying to get this settled with DNR. I need you to call DNR and say they need to work with me to settle this and to get our attorney's fees paid. You know what I did, Senator? I called DNR and said, don't you ever pay that guy's attorney's fees. That's crazy.
Sure.
And so I'm just very nervous based upon my experience in that particular issue, based on my experience of what I've seen done by Big Pharma in the pre-approval list. I'm also very nervous knowing that we didn't set public policy on how nursing homes are compensated and rebased. We basically lost administrative rulings and circuit court cases, and the industry wrote how we're gonna pay them, not us. And now I'm just very nervous that we're gonna start as taxpayers paying the attorney's fees, and I just don't know where that stops. I can tell you that I know it's happening, and I know it's being demanded, I know it's being settled in a DNR Corey issue case, because that's in my neck of the woods.
Okay, Senator, I appreciate your story. Let's get back to the bill here for just a minute.
Well,
okay?
This does deal with
right,
the bill and the amendment.
So the actual department or the agency will have to pay for the award out of its appropriated amount.
Only if
a judge or an administrative law judge finds that it has met the criteria. Are you're concerned about the settlement part of it? You're thinking that the award would not come out of the appropriated amount that the department or agency received?
As I understand it now, this is a little bit different than the inquiry that we had with the senator from Boone, but fees out of the legal expense fund are paid out of 536.087 as well. And,
sure.
And in the defense when they're named as part of that. So,
but what I'm asking you here on
right.
on page two there on, in paragraph two, you're believing that the administrative law judge or the judge has to make a finding or a judgment.
What I'm saying
before
is
the department would have
that language doesn't matter if in a settlement the state confesses that.
And so you're saying that if they settle, this language would not fit under that settlement situation.
And
so then it would still have to go to the Appropriations Committee, they would have to approve the settlement amount.
No. I mean, now, if we're going to take all E's off of the legal expense fund and start approving those on a case-by-case basis, which is what I've advocated in the past, but still, you have got a quasi-judicial order that carries the force and effect, whether it's created at an end of a fact-finding adjudicated procedure or it's a confessed agreed-to settlement of which that is there. Believe me, you and I both know it. The first thing towards any resolution of a dispute that lawyers on both sides do is they make sure how they get paid. That's what they care about. Then they care about their client's interests. It's a reality of the situation. And to try to legislate outside of the reality of the situation and suspend that reality is not what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, I'm just saying, though, that in his bill, the senator from Green, he said awards made under this section should be paid out of the amounts appropriated to the agency or department. So any settlements or awards has to be paid out of the department.
Okay, I see where you're going.
Fund. And what I'm saying is, if that's the case, then in the future, maybe these departments and agencies would be more careful about the rules and regulations that they promulgate or they don't promulgate because they know that, hey, we're going to have to pay for it out of our budget.
And I appreciate your perspective. That's why I'm just offering this as an amendment. I would humbly submit to you and the rest of the members of the General Assembly that I do not buy into the economic development model that says, what's the best economic development you can do in a one-lawyer town? Add another lawyer. It's not right. We shouldn't be paying the lawyers on this side or that side. It's all the taxpayers' money.
Oh, I agree.
Whether the taxpayers do it out of the operating
budget. But I think the senator from Boone pointed out, you know, we
else.
Pay the attorneys' fees for the departments and agencies. And so, some of these people, you talked about your
right.
situation where they shut down a lemonade stand and other things.
I totally agree.
You know, if you're going to pay for one set of lawyers, or just do away with the lawyers out of each department?
You know, I mean, Representative Sylvie has done that. That's been talked about in the appropriations process to turn this to the Attorney General. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me if we have an Attorney General and they're not at least some kind of mediator there. There may be a better way in which to set that up.
Sure.
I'm just saying, I think the senator from Green raises legitimate concerns. I do not believe that paying lawyers is a solution to the legitimate concerns that he's articulated and put forth in his bill. That's why I'm taking this opportunity to not only strip out that we're going to pay the lawyers deal in his bill, but I'm doing it in general to the entire
legislature. Right. I just wanted to point that out, that in his legislation, awards made under this section shall be payable from the amounts appropriated to the agency or department for its operations. But, thank you, Senator. That's all I have.
There's no desire to be heard. The senator from first was first on his feet. What reason do you seek recognition?
Thank you, Mr. President. Inquirer, Senator from Cape.
Senator from Cape, do you yield to the inquiry?
I yield.
He does proceed.
Thank you, Senator, for yielding. I'm becoming more and more intrigued by this conversation as it evolves. So you brought up a situation in your district where DNR is involved in the process and that an attorney has turned over roughly $275,000 worth of bills the department.
Okay, so everyone can get a clear picture. The mining board sets, we've got a pretty, if you find mineable rock, you're going to get to mine that rock. It's pretty much, you've got to put on evidence of a health and I can't remember the legal standards that are there. Somebody within DNR, maybe this senator from Boone, has a better reflection from his times, basically. But when it deals with the mining industry, what basically happens is somebody finds that, and you, as a citizen, if you want to stop that mining operation, carry a heavy burden in which to delay it. So the school wanted to stop this. They hired the legal guns. They hired the experts. They moved forward. And they're in a settlement discussion of where DNR is going to draw the lines and by which times DNR is going to allow the blasting to go on. And the debate is whether or not they were successful. You know, the question becomes, if I get to change your permit one scintilla of an amount, am I therefore justified in my lawsuit? And if I am justified in my lawsuit, do then I get all of my attorney's fees paid and all my expert costs paid? That is going to go through the legal expense fund, as I understand it. It's very complicated because of the way that we draw everything out. And I think it's done by design. So you have to think there's really three pots of money here. There's the legal expense fund that ever since I've been here, we just put a dollar E or an amount E on it, and whatever we lose in lawsuits, we lose and we pay. That contestation case is going through the legal expense fund. Then you have the administrative proceeding where, you know, you have an insurance issue or a licensure issue, and my understanding that can go through what's called a section 536.087, and then that would require a specific request to pay those attorney's fees. Now we're creating a new avenue by which the taxpayers will be responsible for attorney's fees, and I just want to make sure that we understand what we're doing, that we may have a laudable goal in the senator from Green and what he's trying to accomplish. But paying attorney's fees for people isn't always the right thing to do.
Okay, on that note, let me hold you up, because what I'm trying to do is just understand what the standard is and what you understand the standard to be, because
On one hand, you said you picked up the phone and you called DNR and said, don't pay those legal fees.
Well, he wanted me to encourage a settlement.
I'm sorry?
He wanted me to encourage a settlement.
Right.
I de-encouraged the settlement.
Right, okay. But on the other hand, I hear you saying that when a quasi-governmental or quasi-judicial order is given to this General Assembly that you have to pay them. The way I understand the Constitution is that we are the appropriators, and unless the Constitution delegates through a vote of the people that we will spend money as appropriators in a certain area, that we're not bound. We're not bound by a judicial decision to appropriate money.
I think that that is a very legitimate discussion. It is a high-level discussion, and it has wrapping consequences to
the... So it's above our pay grade?
No, it's not above our pay grade, and I think it's a legitimate discussion to have. Oftentimes, we are taught that government is a three-legged stool. You're now making the argument that it's not an interchangeable, interworking three-legged stool, that there are true separation of powers that make them individual pegs, and that they're not dependent and tied in. It is a legitimate argument. I will tell you, when confronted with that, I happen to side with the fact that we needed to pay those court judgments. That, you know, the judiciary is the weakest branch, but whether we like it or not, going all the way back to Marbury versus Madison in those cases, whether we like it or not, and we have not done anything to change it, they are the ones that determine the constitutionality of an act, not us. Okay, and that may be wrong.
Okay. And I agree. We probably need to have further discussion. I come down on the side of, President Jackson, who said of Marshall's court's decision that, he can render his opinion, let him enforce it.
Yeah. But he didn't do anything, to undo that. So it was almost like John Jay got the Pyrrhic victory from where they articulated, and then he didn't get his appointments, but that law still stayed on the books.
Great debate over the last couple of centuries of the effect of Marbury versus Madison, and some will say that it is sets up the standard for judicial review. I would say it sets up the standard for judicial restraint. And so we can continue.
And I think that's a legitimate point. The only thing I'm saying and that differentiates the two timelines is one hasn't occurred yet. DNR and the Corey issue in Cape County and the Lutheran High School has not occurred yet. All right. Once it does either have an entry of judgment or a resolution that carries the force and effect of law or quasi-judicial ruling, I think it steps into the other category that we end up having
Fair
to pay
enough.
It.
I'd also just then close with the idea, and I think I brought it up when we were debating this yesterday, is would it be wise for us to take the attorneys out of the equation totally?
There is a legitimate discussion to have within the Appropriation Committee of whether or not departments need to have attorneys that, I don't care if you have a law degree, but if you are actually practicing law, should that be turned over to the Attorney General's office so that there is some kind of separation and checking and balancing on an elected official that's there? Right now, these department lawyers, do they answer to the governor? I guess they answer to the governor, but should the executive be practicing law?
Right.
You talk about a separation of powers issues there. That's a legitimate discussion to have.
All right.
But we have to do the work. What I disagree with Representative Sylvia is we didn't reorganize government. We didn't reorganize the quasi-judicial proceedings that we put in place. All we did was got rid of the lawyers. That's not a solution either. If we want to get rid of the lawyers, then it's incumbent upon us to create a new system.
Right.
We can't leave the old system in place and then just remove the players. That's like saying we're going to play checkers without the checkers.
Right.
And we shouldn't do that as a General Assembly either.
Right. All right.
In my opinion.
Thank you, Senator.
Yes, sir.
Senator, Senator's desire to be heard. The Senator from Buchanan County.
To inquire of the Senator from Cape.
Senator from Cape, do you yield again?
I yield.
He does
Thank
proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I think that you're really trying to look out for the taxpayers here. I can see that. But I feel like we also need to look out for the little guy. And my understanding is that as it is, if I'm a little guy and I'm a businessman, a doctor, a dentist, whatever, take this case of a doctor because I can resonate with that, the State Board of Healing Arts comes and files a complaint against me saying, you're doing something you shouldn't be doing. And maybe it's some new treatment or something. I don't know, I can give you 100 scenarios. And the department says, we're going to put you out of business. Well, they have a bottomless pit of money and a deep pocket to hire lawyers. And I don't. I'm a poor guy. I don't have a lot of money. Right now, as it is, doesn't the fact that they're going to cover my attorney's fees give me an opportunity at justice that I wouldn't otherwise have?
No, it doesn't happen within BOA. Because when you have a discipline proceeding, you're either going to get discharged out of that discipline proceeding or you're going to settle. And BOA will originally come in, and I don't know if you've had
What's
to go
BOA?
Through
it.
Board of Healing Arts.
Oh, BOA.
I don't know if you've ever had to do it, but the specific exact example that you gave.
Well, I've had lots
not,
of.
Yeah, it does not work out that way.
I've had lots of colleagues that have, but so.
Right.
You know,
but,
you end up hiring an attorney to represent you before the board, and then you got to go to the administrative hearing judge.
Yeah, but.
And,
but
and then you win. Well, the thing is, I'm now out a whole bunch of money, and I can think of a.
Well, but Senator, your example, let's take your example to reality, all right? We, in state statute, demand that the Board of Healing Arts investigate and do that on every complaint, okay? That's in state statute. We just beefed all that up last year or the year before that.
No, I handled
and,
that.
In light of all that. So we are setting state policy in here. If you have a problem with that, change state policy. The solution to the issues that you raise is not paying or having the taxpayers pay for the lawyers. It's just not right.
But wait, aren't there cases where the heavy hand of government comes down on a citizen through an agency? Are there not cases like that?
I'm sure we could all find them, Senator.
Right.
I'm sure we could all find them.
So you admit that there's cases like that. And if there are, then isn't the fact that we're going to make the agency or the government pay your attorney's fees give you access to justice?
No.
I mean, sure it does.
Okay, then let's make the doctors pay the attorney's fees of all the malpractice lawsuits.
They ultimately do. They ultimately do.
Only if they win. Only if they win, they pay a contingency fee. Why don't we put an assessment on all physicians and create this great big pool of money? And we'll call it the Let's Sue Doctors Fund. And then if you're a plaintiff's attorney, then we'll just let them tap into the Let's Sue Doctors Fund.
This isn't
because
about
to take
doctors.
Your logic
Let's talk
out.
About a farmer. Let's talk about a farmer, and the DNR says, you got to do it this way. And the farmer says, that is not according to law. You cannot make me do that. And they say, well, we're going to make you do it anyway. And we got the lawyers and the fees to pay for the lawyers. And we're going to take you to court. Well, what's my recourse? I don't have the money to hire an attorney, but if I go to an attorney and I say, hey, do I have a case? And the attorney says, yeah, this is horrible. The DNR shouldn't be doing this. I will fight this, and I'll get the money at the end. Well, then it gives me an opportunity for justice as that poor farmer. And that's how I'm seeing this.
And that's fine. That's fine, but you wouldn't see it that way to put a pool of money out there so that poor plaintiffs that are harmed by physicians can sue physicians. So I'm not for paying lawyers, all right? You're for paying lawyers in one area, but not for paying them in the other area.
Isn't it
strange? I'm fine with
ironic,
that.
Ironic, you know?
Listen, I appreciate you. I'm ending this inquiry. All I want is a vote on it, okay? So I'm not yielding, all right? I want a vote. I got to get out of here. All I'm asking for is a vote.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on the amendment pending by the senator from Cape? The senator from Boone County, for what reason do you rise?
Speak against the amendment.
Proceed.
Thank you. Just the scorecard so we all know where we are. Right now, in law, as has existed for over 30 years, if a state agency takes an action against you, against your license, in the administrative context, and you go to the Administrative Hearing Commission, which is where these things are litigated, and you win. Agency tried to take your license away, your liquor license, your nursing license, your cosmetology license, whatever license it is, and you win. Agency loses. What the law says in 536.087 is you get to then file a new case in the Administrative Hearing Commission to get your attorney's fees. You don't just get your fees. The Administrative Hearing Commission has to find that the agency was not substantially justified in bringing the case against you. If they brought the case and it was a reasonable case and the agency just lost, you don't get your fees. But if an independent fact finder finds that that agency had no basis to do this, drug you in here and made you spend money, you can get your fees. And under 087, it does not come out of the legal expense fund. The statute specifically says that the agency who gets hit for those fees has to come to the General Assembly and specifically have a line asking for fees for losing that case. It happens every year. It's negligible. It's still some amount, generally around $40,000 or $50,000 when it does happen in a given year cumulatively. It's not pretty, but I will tell you that that mechanism is something that keeps agencies on the straight and narrow, because I will guarantee you that those agencies do not want to come before the General Assembly and say, yeah, we brought a case against a bar, a nurse, a cosmetologist, and an independent fact finder found that we had no basis to do it, so we now have to pay fees. That is a big incentive for an agency to stay on the straight and narrow. That exists right now, okay? What the senator from Green's bill does is it says, in the rulemaking context, when an agency is making a rule or should have made a rule, if the same thing happens there and they lose, you can get your attorney's fees. On top of that, what exists in law right now is you can go sue an agency in state court, and if they are in the wrong, you can get your attorney's fees. What the amendment does is take out all of those provisions in circuit court, in a contested case on a license, or what's being proposed by the senator from Green in rulemaking, and says nobody is ever going to get their attorney's fees. Now, keep in mind, the amounts here are not huge. This isn't like second injury fund and some of the other things that we debate. It's not like the legal expense fund. But I'll tell you what it is. It is the last bar of defense against an overreaching government to come down on you because they have otherwise no reason to not be abusive, as the senator from Buchanan said. And so I want to make that clear. If you take this away, what you are saying to agencies is you are now unfettered to take whatever action you want against somebody's livelihood, whether or not there's a substantial basis for you to do it. And I'll give you an example, Mr. President, of what happens here. Let's use nursing homes for an example. Nursing homes are licensed by the Board of Nursing Home Administrators, which is a lay board. They're chosen by the governor, they're confirmed by us, and it's a group of people who meet a couple times a year. And if they decide they want to take action against somebody's license, they get in a room and in a closed session with an attorney from the Attorney General's office, they make the determination. And you know what happens? And sometimes, Mr. President, in those circumstances, that attorney in the room tells that board, I don't think there's any basis here for you to take this action. And sometimes those boards do it anyway. I have seen it myself where they do it anyway. And when they do that and they lose and there was no basis for them to do it, this is the mechanism for it to come to the attention of the General Assembly so that we can address the situation. If we take this away, unfettered agency action against people's livelihoods, and we won't even hear about it. So for that reason, Mr. President, I do not think it's a good amendment, because not only does this amendment take away the people's rights in the proposed bill from the senator from Green, it takes away existing rights that have existed for 30 years or more. It's a bad amendment. Thank you for letting me speak against it, Mr. President.
Does any of the senators desire to be heard? The senator from the first.
President, to speak in favor of the amendment.
Proceed.
Mr. President, this is a classic example, and it's interesting just to follow up on the thoughts of the senator from Boone, in that in some way, shape, or form that this amendment would take away the rights of the people. This is classic government creating the problem by overregulation, and we're all guilty in here, and then how we're going to rush in and solve the problem
on behalf of those that may lose their rights, we're going to make sure that everybody has their attorney's fees covered. That's the way we fix the problem. Instead of, as the senator from Cape said, let's address the problem of the infrastructure to begin with. This is because government has gotten into every aspect of business across the state over decades. And the way we fix it is we're going to cover everybody's attorney's fees. I would encourage my colleagues to vote in favor of this amendment. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on the amendment? Senator from Green.
Mr. President, would you lay that bill over, please?
The bill shall be laid on the informal calendar with that same amendment pending. Senator from the 23rd District.
Thank you, Mr. President. We will stay on that calendar, Senate Joint Resolution 29.
Informal calendar, Senate Bills for Perfection, SJR 29, the Senator from the 24th District in Central St. Louis County.
Mr. President, I ask that Senate Joint Resolution 29 be brought up for perfection.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from the 24th. All those of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The joint resolution is before the body. Senator from the 24th.
Mr. President, as you might recall, this bill has to do with shortening the legislative session, and I actually have a Senate substitute, copies of which have been distributed. Or actually,
send the substitute forward.
I don't have the yellow box.
Has the substitute been distributed, Senator?
The substitute's been distributed last night and today. And
are you requesting a waiver of the reading?
I am asked, well, actually, I don't have the yellow box to bring it forward. Excuse me? Oh, the copy is fine. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, so essentially, if the body will recall, the original bill was to move the legislative session from 18 weeks to 12 weeks. And in my mind, that was just the opening salvo, if you will. I was looking to get other people's ideas on this, and you know, many have reported that the reason that I brought this idea forward was to try to save money, and that it absolutely is not the case. It happens to save money by shortening the session, but the purpose for shortening the session was to really create a more refined and focused process in the private sector. When you don't like your outcomes, you go back to your process and refocus your process and look at it and hope to create better outcomes. And so the original idea to take on the legislative session in terms of its length was to really focus the body in different ways. Now, the substitute I just sent everybody last night and again today was the original bill was to go from 18 weeks to 12 weeks, and 12 weeks results in 48 legislative days. Typically in our current session, as the last two or three years, we've been 72, 73 legislative days. So what the substitute does is create a lot of flexibility for the General Assembly. The General Assembly will be required to have its regular session take no longer than 48 days, but it allows the General Assembly to go to about the middle of April. So, you know, it can be very creative in terms of how session could proceed. You could see a situation where we might actually gavel in January and then come back 2 weeks later. You could have weeks where you go 5 days, weeks where you go 1 day. It would create the opportunity for the Senate itself to decide how the session would proceed. Keep in mind, this would require a vote of the people, and it wouldn't go into effect until 2015. So with that, I move for the adoption of the Senate substitute.
Thank you, Senator. But a little housekeeping before we there. You're asking for a waiver of the reading?
Yes, I am.
Hearing no objection, the reading shall be waived. The Senator has moved for the adoption of the Senate substitute to SJR 29. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? The senator from the 8th District is on his feet. For what reason do you rise?
I have an amendment.
Send your amendment forward. Has it been distributed?
It's been distributed. I ask for a waiver of the reading and move for its adoption.
Hearing no objection, the reading shall be waived. The senator has moved for the adoption of that amendment. Senator, do you care to explain that amendment?
Yes, this amendment, all it does is allows bills to be carried over from the first year of the General Assembly to the second year of a General Assembly. So when we come back the second year of a General Assembly, we can start, we can hit the ground running. Bills would already be in committee. Bills would already be on the calendar. But once again, it only does it in the General Assembly. All bills would die after the two-year General Assembly would end. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
You've heard the motion, the adoption motion from the senator from the 8th. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? The senator from the 11th in Jackson County, for what reason do you seek recognition?
Can I inquire of the senator from 24th?
Senator from the 24th, you yield to the inquiry.
I do.
He does proceed.
Thank you for yielding, Senator. I'll get to the amendment. I just, we didn't really get a chance to get too much into the bill beyond your opening remarks. In the Senate substitute, let me walk through a couple of things. I won't go through all the variations of this bill, but we started out in the original bill as late March, April 6th, right? That was one version?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And now in the Senate substitute, we're up to April 30th. Is that right? Or
yeah, that's the two-week period between. We'd actually would end session the middle of April, and then there's that period, the administrative period that's required at the end of every session. Just like the session now doesn't really end until the end of May.
Okay. All right. So you would go to what? Whatever the first Tuesday after the full moon of the second solstice or whatever, however that's worded.
Yeah, the middle, okay. Early part of April.
Okay. Why are we doing all this?
Well, as I mentioned before, I think that if you look at the history of the state's often redefined its time down here, the length of session. You should have received yesterday information about all the other states. My thinking here is that we could refine and focus our process. You know, right now our tradition is we come down on Monday afternoon, we leave on Thursday morning. My perception the first year is we kind of take our time. It's a pretty simple pace. We know the deadlines in May, what we do in February or March. You know, a lot of it has an eye towards the fact that we've got so much time. There are very many days, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, where, you know, we're done at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, particularly early on. I just saw where there are lots of gaps, lots of time, downtime here that we choose to fill it, you know, by actually being out of session or adjourning that day, or we fill it because we've got time to fill. So the idea is to have it be a more focused process. This essentially frees up anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks. It would be an opportunity for the Senate to take the Senate floor to the people. If you think about it in its fullest form, we might have an idea, a big idea, a little idea, but one of the things we don't do very well in my mind right now is take those ideas to all four corners of the state and present our ideas and make our case. And I would suggest that if we did that, we'd have a greater understanding of what we're doing. We might have better buy-in from the state. We might have the opportunity to hear those good ideas. And right now we pre-file in December, and I could see where we might pre-file in November. And we could get a lot done, a lot of the negotiation and debating that goes on down here, and quite frankly, just a lot of introducing of new ideas, could all take place before we get here. And when we get here, we could focus on execution.
Now, am I not correct? You mentioned pre-filing. Now, can't we technically pre-file bills in July? It's just
well,
not really
we could, and we could do that. I mean, the idea is that if this were to come to be, if the people voted for this, then we'd have 2013, 2014. Those in the Senate at that time could organize the rules, organize the process to prepare for the shorter session that wouldn't start until January of 2015.
Well, and let me ask you. You gave us a chart. You gave us a couple of charts in a memorandum, and one lists all the states.
Yep.
Okay. And let's, for example, go to Florida. I assume that's 60. This is on the several page one.
Yep.
60 calendar days, I assume that is, with the C denotes calendar days.
Correct.
Right. You know, there's only one thing that I did a little bit of research that your chart doesn't show. Guess how many special sessions they've had since 1988 in Florida?
It's probably quite a few.
33.
Okay.
It's almost several. In fact, one year they had They have actually several special sessions in 1 year. So
okay.
If the motive is, so I guess while we've got this information showing, hey, this is how much they spend, what's missing is, well, what was the result? Okay, now we have a session now that's been this way for a long time, but I guess if we're going to come at it from a cost perspective, how are you saving money when you just have 33 special sessions?
As I mentioned in my opening remarks, this is not about a cost perspective. This is not why I brought this idea forward. This is an attempt to focus the time spent here.
Okay, let me ask you procedurally. If we have a shortened session, are you going to change the Senate rules to where you no longer allow the filibuster?
That's not in my proposal.
I know it's not in your proposal, but I guess if you have a shortened time, doesn't that reward somebody obstructing something, not the other side? I mean, if you're trying to stop something and a bill comes in January, you've got to stop that thing for 3 months. I mean, you've got to try to stop it in the Senate, and then if it comes back from the House or whatever, and now you've shortened it to 45, 60 days, whatever, that rewards people trying to stop something, right? I mean, the reason you have a special session is that time is extended, and that makes it more difficult for the person trying to obstruct something from stopping it. So what I mean is, without, you're not contemplating in all this changing the Senate rules and doing away with filibuster.
Well, the Senate itself will create its own rules, is my understanding, and this is not the purpose. The purpose of this is not to reward and make it easier to stop things. By your logic, we should go all year then.
No, I mean, some states go all year, some states go, I mean, what no, I'm no, getting I mean, to is...
I'm just following your logic.
The
your
idea
logic is
of,
the shorter the deadline, the easier it is to stop something.
No, it's not. I ask you a question you haven't answered, which is, does not a shortened time frame reward somebody actually trying to obstruct it? And without changing the procedures here, so you just meet in special session every year like Florida did 33 times, right?
We meet in special session like we do now.
What?
Or we meet in special session like we do now. How many years in a row have we had special session?
The last couple we've had several, but it wasn't right. It's not. I'm just saying, if you looked, the information you gave us did not contemplate the number of states that also have special sessions, which you would immediately look at a shortened time frame. Well, don't you just have special session? And if your purpose was not to come with cost, okay, then how are we going to become more efficient? Are we going to change the Senate rules? Because if you have a shortened time frame, one of the concerns I would have that I wish you would address is, does it not reward people and make it easier to stop things? Because you have a shortened time frame.
Well, that
instead
may...
of having to stop a bill for 4 weeks, you only have to do it for 2 weeks, right?
Well, that's, you know, that's the concern that you have and the thought that you put forward. That's not, wasn't part of my consideration. I mean, I look at states like Texas, with economies the multiple of the size of ours, and how often does Texas meet?
Texas in special session.
So they're 90 days every other year.
They've had about 20 since 1988, 19, I think.
And what's the average length of a special session, a day or two?
140. I don't have the length, but I guess I'm just saying they have 140 calendar days, right, biannually? They do it biannually.
That's correct.
Well, the reason that we changed it in this state, I mean, again, state to state varies. You have some legislatures that are bigger operations, I guess, that meet year-round. I mean, I guess I'm not recommending that.
Well,
but I'm,
no, but that's good. I mean, I think what all those year-round states have in common is they're very far to the left.
I'm sorry?
The states that meet year-round, what they have in common is that they're very big government states. They're very Democratic-dominated general assemblies. It's a full-time job. It's all year long. And what I'm suggesting is that we focus our time and attention here.
Did you say that they were left-leaning states?
A little bit.
Okay, so Governor Pataki of New York was a left-leaner? He's a Republican, right?
No, but his General Assembly is very much to the left.
Oh, okay.
Should we go through the list
of
year-round states?
I wish you'd get back to the question, which is, what if you go back to a shorter time frame, Does it not make it easier for somebody to filibuster something? Did you contemplate that?
Of course.
And if there's evidence that you don't include in the information you bring us that shows that there are a lot of these places that have shortened sessions have more special sessions, what are you accomplishing?
And what happens in a special session? The focus is narrow, isn't it?
I think that was a question I just asked. I'm just curious.
I'm not concerned with the number of special sessions that may happen as a result of this change.
Okay. So we're doing this to make it more efficient?
To create the potential for it to be a more efficient process.
Okay. But you're not going to change the Senate rules, so you're going to have a shortened time frame for a body in which one individual can stand up and take up time.
And that person can do that now.
Right. And it doesn't always work, but how does shortening that make it better? How does shortening that make it more efficient?
I think that you work to your deadlines in anything you do. I think that, you know, it's incumbent upon leadership to suggest to its members that we're here for X number of days, that we need to have our priorities, focus on our priorities. I think it makes it more incumbent upon us to spend time in the off months working our legislative ideas, presenting those ideas to members in our caucus, members in the other party, to go around the state to present those ideas to citizens, to get their input, to get their ideas, to have the public have a better understanding of what the heck we're going to do when we get down here in January. Maybe it'd be good if they knew in September, October, November what our plans were in January, February, March. That doesn't happen now. What happens now is we kind of casually get ourselves down here, and we've got until the middle of May, and we can have ideas. There's ideas that come to the Senate floor last year that the idea wasn't even in the building until February or March. And what happened on the last day of session last year? We got to this deadline, and we had all these last few minutes and few seconds to decide on big bills. What I'm trying to do is to move away from that. I'm trying to put the burden on all of us to do a better job from May to December in explaining to the voters what it is we think we'd like to try to do down here. That's what I mean by efficiency. I mean 12 months of efficiency, not just the time we spend down here. And this would create, it'd be such that if we have good ideas and we want to see them be turned into law, we've got to spend a much longer period of time getting those ideas out and getting support for those ideas and getting input in those ideas. That's what I mean by efficiency.
But you don't want to do that really during session, right? You want to do this in this off time when we're traveling around?
I think the citizens of Missouri would welcome the opportunity to hear from all of us, to understand what ideas that we're contemplating, to get their input. I think that would make government better. I think people would feel more part of it. As it is now, people have very little understanding of what goes on down here. It's very difficult to follow, and one might suggest that that's just the right way to go. You know, that there are some people that think the more confusing government is, the harder it is to follow at home, the easier it is for people to turn it off, and the easier it is for us to do whatever we want to do down here. So what I'm trying to do is draw in the citizens of Missouri into this process more in an effective way. And I think by shortening the time we spend down here, it gives us an opportunity to go out and do those things to a greater degree. I also think this creates flexibility for all of us down here. How many days we get down here, we gavel in, and we say, well, there's nothing going on, we gavel out. It happens a lot. I mean, the ability to be flexible, the ability to contemplate, you know, maybe 5-day weeks and then 2-day weeks, I think that what you're asking those that come after you and after me is to be more efficient with their time.
I was looking a little bit closer at the chart. You used the term left-leaning states. Is Wisconsin a left-leaning state?
It was until 2010.
Well, I'm just saying you said that it
no,
was
a it was the long history. Wisconsin has a long history. I mean, if there's a state that probably started the whole idea of being left-leaning, Wisconsin's a poster child.
Okay. Is Ohio a left-leaning state?
No, I would not. I describe Ohio as a swing state.
Okay. All right. I just wanted. New Jersey, is that a left-leaning state?
God, yes.
Okay.
I mean, these are interesting questions. I mean, Ohio is legitimate.
Well, no, I mean, you use left-leaning.
No,
Ohio's
legitimate. But I mean,
Ohio and
I mean,
Wisconsin
to think,
are no's, but I was trying to get to your.
No, let's go through it. You
want to
filibuster? Let's
right.
go through it. So let's go through California. No, that's center right. That's state. I'm going to filibuster my own bill here now, but let's keep going. So then, Massachusetts goes 30 or 42 weeks. That's great. What about Illinois, our neighboring state? It's a full-time job in Illinois, isn't it? That's a center right state. I'm done filibustering my bill.
So if your cost,
is not, not the reason
I brought
this
forward. You're talking about these full-time, did you look at their, what they're paid in those states? Or, I mean, if your objective is not cost savings.
Yep.
Okay, are you saving any money beyond the per diem on this? Are you looking at salaries? Are you looking
at pensions? Well, there's no way to put a real number on us passing better bills, better laws. There's no way to put a number on the citizens of Missouri being more involved in the process. There's no way to put a number on the citizens of Missouri coming together behind the General Assembly in conjunction with the executive branch and putting forward laws that the state of Missouri can grow and prosper with. I'm sorry, I can't get a fiscal note on that. I can't get a 10-year score on that. But that's what we're trying to do here. Is we're trying, when you in the private sector, when you don't like the outcomes or you want to improve upon your outcomes, you focus on your process. Our time here is the process. Our time in the months we're not here is the process. This is an attempt to improve the process. This is how it works in the private sector. You fix your process. You improve your process. Outcomes will follow. Outcomes will improve.
Okay, so, but your answer was you can't put a number on it?
I cannot put a number on how much better off
the citizens
of Missouri would be.
That didn't work out the last time I went to see my bank. I'd like a loan, but I couldn't put a number on it. I mean, what do you mean you don't have a number on it?
What I mean is if...
That's what we do in this building.
Well, what I'm talking about is I'm talking about a state where the citizens are in tune with what's going on in the General Assembly. I'm talking about a state where they feel like they have input in the creation of law. I'm talking about a state that is optimistic and forward-thinking and excited about what goes on in the state. I don't know how much financial benefit that'll bring, but I do feel safe in saying that it's a positive. It will have financial impact. That's a positive financial impact.
So
I can't measure it. It could be unlimited. Who knows? Maybe instead of our state growing at 1 or 1.5%, it grows at 4 or 5%. Maybe instead of our state being the lowest in job creation of all surrounding states, we become the highest in job creation of all surrounding states. I can't put a number on it. I don't know what it's going to be. It's a positive. It's a net very big positive in my mind, potential for it, a net very big positive. What's the downside?
But that's the part we can't put the number on, right? The growth rate of the state and all that. That's theory, right? That's not fact.
It's theory. So
are the states that have a shorter time frame, are they all doing better in every category?
I'm not asking that question. You are.
Right, because it's my inquiry. Is that, I mean, I'm just getting straight, is that the part we can't put a number on?
Suggesting is you could not put a, if our state improved this process, if our state made better laws, if our state made laws that more accurately reflect the values of our citizens.
Isn't that determined by elections? By people they send down here coming from diverse backgrounds? Missouri's a diverse state. There's two huge urban centers. There's a proud agricultural part. There's rice growers. There's rice farming in Missouri. There's production. There's two urban centers. I mean, and the way people do that is they send elected representatives down to represent their sometimes diverse interests. I mean, how is that not efficient now? Or maybe it's inefficient, but that's what democracy is kind of supposed to be.
I'm not suggesting that we change our democratic process.
But you want, when we get to this efficient part, so you think shorter days will...
No, actually, I think this would be longer days, quite frankly.
You actually think that less days means more efficiency?
The potential for more efficiency.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Senator. Mr. President.
Senator from the 11th.
Do you have an inquiry or something?
Senator from the 11th.
Oh, hey, how you doing? Could I inquire of the senator from 8th?
Senator from the 8th. Senator from the 8th. Senator from the 8th. The senator from the 11th would like an inquiry. Do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Hey, how you doing?
Sorry,
you.
Senator. I had some constituents out there that I was talking
I'm
with.
Sorry to interrupt you. I just, you know, we were on the bill, and I just didn't get a chance to talk to your amendment.
Sure.
I wanted to clarify your amendment.
So is this, the only part that I am curious about is, shall carry over with the same status?
So basically if a bill...
And what I mean is, you're talking about bill number and status. What does status mean?
Status would be the whether it's on the House calendar, whether it's on this calendar or on the House calendar, or whether it's passed out of committee, wherever it is in the process.
We just go back to that point?
We would go back to that the second year.
Excuse me. Oh, my. Each moment this becomes more horrifying. So... You would even do that, even getting back to what I discussed with the Senator from 24th, we have this thing called elections. So
it's only during a General Assembly. So
what's that?
From the first session of the General Assembly to the second session. So there wouldn't be a situation that every year that bill is carried over. At the end of the General Assembly, the second session of the General Assembly, the bill would then go back, would be eliminated, and we'd start fresh with the new elected officials after the election.
Yeah, but in the course of years, we have new elected officials in the status quo, right?
We have a few that do have special elections, and they are added into the mix occasionally.
What if in the middle of this process, the Missouri House picks a different leadership team or something? I mean, do you, and priorities change, do you just kill the bill?
Well, I think we have a pretty lengthy process here, Senator, often bills come back and forth between bodies. So if leadership changed and the direction had changed, I believe that you could handle that in a conference
report.
Well,
what I wanted to get to is you're not just changing the number. I wanted to make it clear. It's not just like, hey, I've got number 104, and I get to have number 104 next year. You're also referring to the actual, with the word status, the calendar, right, mm-hmm. where you get to go right back to where we were.
Right, and that way when we came up here the second year, instead of killing a few weeks, letting bills get through committee and get back to the floor,
we can
go straight back to debating.
So in theory, not just in fact, when we met in January, the last bill of the session, last session was, I believe, the nuclear power plant. So we would just come right back to that moment, right then.
You know, we would have a chance to discuss it in length versus trying to ram it all in at the end of the session, trying to get it done the last few seconds, and not having actual opportunities to go through a bill. I think that's not necessarily bad. I'm not saying that I support that bill. I'm just saying that instead of pushing through the last day, we cover so many topics, we could slow down a little bit, because I think a lot of times you've worked so hard to get to a bill to its final step, and then all of a sudden, that last day, it's do or die. If you don't get it done, it's going to die. So in my theory, under this proposal, we wouldn't be a do or die situation. It would be a situation we could take and have a methodical look at the bills that are before us, and we wouldn't have to feel like we're pushing to get some things done the very last day, because we could address it when we came back the next year.
Okay, so, but on the point I made, the last bill of last session was that, and walk me through what would happen when we, let's say your amendment got on and the voters approved this and changed this. Walk me through, the last bill of the session was the nuclear power plant, okay? I won't get into all the minutiae of that, but I'm just saying that was a substitute on the floor, blah, 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 blah. What happens with your amendment when we come back this January?
Okay,
go right back to that?
It'd be on the informal calendar. Would you agree that that bill was laid over to the informal calendar?
I think it was, yeah.
Okay, so it'd be on the informal calendar, and I believe our rules have the floor leader identifying what bill we go to next. He or she would have to go back to that bill for further discussion.
On the Senate floor, not back. It doesn't go back to committees.
Correct.
To get that. You just go right back to the floor leader at any time. You go right to that bill.
Right,
it's been through the process,
and I don't know if we've got any new members to the General Assembly that we didn't have last year. It went through committee, it had a hearing, and it was on the floor ready for debate. If we don't like that bill, it gives us the opportunity to stand up and offer amendments on it.
Okay.
By the way, a senator from Cole would have liked that choice.
Well, you know, amendments are like this, or sometimes like the wind, you know? When you're putting up
plastic, you don't like the wind. When you're out in a sailboat, you like the wind, but it's kind of, you know, these scenarios where he might like this, but there might be another bill that he doesn't like that the same thing happens. And I guess on workers' comp, we would just go right back to the senator from Lawrence's conference report, which I'd be okay with, but the nuclear power plant, I'm not so sure. Well, I mean, so it's like the wind. I mean, if I'm in a sailboat, I like the wind. If I'm putting up plastic on my house, I don't like the wind. So it's kind of, this amendment kind of cuts both ways, right?
Absolutely. And you know what? We have a right to get up and offer amendments and change bills as we see fit and as the body sees fit. All I'm doing is trying to be more efficient, allowing us the opportunity to not have to start over on day one. And it also allows us to be more methodical on that last few days. It allows us to say, wait a minute, we don't have to get this done today because we can come back next year and address this subject. So I think it helps. Yeah, you're right. The wind blows both ways. And, you know, there's things we're going to like about this amendment. There's things we're going to not like about it.
And I get back to process because the reason I raised the nuclear power plant was while a Senate committee had dealt with that, a Senate committee had not worked with that particular version, right? And that was, you got up on that bill, I got up, the senator from 24th, senator from Dent got up, because we did not, you know, we hadn't seen a lot of that, right? Even though it had been in committee and all that. And it could be any number of bills, but what I want to get to is this bill under your amendment, we would go right back and be on the informal calendar, and while the Senate floor might discuss, a committee wouldn't really deal with it. And, you know, I know that happens in the status quo, but I'm just saying we wouldn't have, beyond the Senate floor, another ability to change or amend that legislation in the committee process.
If we're going to continue to talk about this, you're absolutely right. But I will tell you that I believe this gives us a little bit of a break to say, hey, you know what, we can wait on this. We don't have to push this bill to a vote and potentially somebody drop a Senate substitute and all of a sudden we're voting on it with a short amount of time and not having the ample time.
Well, but the point of the Senate was we weren't voting on it.
Say again?
The point of the Senate was we were not voting on it.
Correct.
That's what as you know, that's what makes us different from the guys over there. We didn't vote on that bill.
No, you're exactly right.
Right.
But I do believe that the last day of session, we probably pushed too hard, and this amendment, if this got through, would actually give us more recourse to say, you know what, we don't have to push so hard on the last week to get things done, and we can spend more time and say, you know what, we can get to this beginning of next session if we think it's important. If we don't, then we have a floor leader, and we don't have to bring it up. And if we don't like it, we get up and continue to amend it and change it to make it to where we do like it. It's not like we're going to go back to it and just vote up
well,
and down.
Well, and the only problem is, you know, you foresee a circumstance where, and nothing against the current occupant of the office, but you foresee a circumstance, if you were in my chair, where the floor leader always does what you want. And that has not been my experience in this body. So what I mean is you say, well, he or she may not go to that part. That's kind of up to their discretion sometimes, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, you might want them not to immediately go back to that bill the first 2 weeks in January, but maybe they do, right? And that's the part you can't control, except you can.
But we can get up and inquire and drop substitutes and drop amendments on things that we don't like and change it
to
make it better.
But when I hear this efficiency, I just want to make sure that we're not getting to, you know, making this into a 34-member house with a short number of days.
I would wholeheartedly agree with you. The Senate needs to be more deliberate, and that's one of the reasons I think that this amendment makes sense. It allows us to, instead of push things through that last week of session, it allows us to say, you know what, this bill's not going to die. We're going to get a chance to look at it in its entirety, and we can address it in January when we come back.
Okay. Thank you for the inquiry, Senator.
Senator from the 11th.
Mr. President, may I inquire of the Senator from 13th?
Senator from the 13th, do you yield?
Yes.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, I don't know if you've heard any of this.
The debate?
Yes.
No, actually, I was talking to our colleague from the 23rd about something else.
Okay. You've been in this building a long time, okay? My first reaction is, when I read this bill back when it was filed, and has changed since then, it just looks to me like, won't the likely outcome, we'll just have one or two special sessions to make up for the stuff we don't get done?
I'll tell you what, since 2007, I think out of 5 years, I think 4 to 5 years we've had special session. So an issue always comes up for special session. On the amendment, I think one of the process I was taught early on is you don't want to make it easy to pass a piece of legislation because you might have legislation that gets put on the books at someone's whim. You know, this issue came up, and actually it was a senator from Jackson County, the former U.S. Congressman Kara McCarthy, that explained that to me early in my career, that something that's so vital to you might not be as vital to someone such as myself on the eastern side of the state. So I disagree with the senator from Jackson on his amendment. And if you want to start from where you left off, then just introduce the bill at the beginning of the year and have that go through the committee process, kind of like some of the discussion took place in the insurance committee on the workers' comp issue. You had that conference committee just start from there the next year. So I think you can do that already without letting it start from where we ended, if I'm making any sense. I think you can already do that.
Well, isn't the potential for not only less deliberation, but also you're just stuck with sort largely leftover deliberation from the previous year, right?
Yeah, and one of the issues I have discussed, and being in the minority and being from the St. Louis metropolitan area, I have not introduced, but I even talked to some of the chamber people that were up last week. Why aren't we introducing a bill dealing with the $60 million freight forwarders? That was an issue everyone could agree upon, and start that discussion going again. So I think you can currently do it. I don't think you need to do what the senator from the 8th is attempting to do. But that's just my opinion.
What on your amendment, on the pending amendment, does, anyway, well, this is going to be sort of interesting to watch, so I think I'll end my inquiry. So, hey, thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you.
Further discussion. Senator from Atchison, for what purpose do you rise?
To inquire the senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I listened to the debate between you and the senator from the 11th, and a couple of things that I thought were noteworthy. Number one, I actually came into the legislature, into the House in 2003. And that year we had an unprecedented number of special session calls. And so, I mean, to a certain degree, I think he's right, that if you shorten the session, there is the potential to have special sessions. What I thought was most interesting after 2003, because that was the last time we had all the states dealt with major budget challenges in that time frame, there was a study done, and I looked upstairs to see if I still had it. I don't have it. I needed to see if I can find it. But there was an interesting report done, and what they found was the longer legislatures were in session, the higher the probability that they would raise taxes. And the reason they said that was because what happens is as we are in this building all the time and not out in the real world, the only people that we hear from are the special interests and the people who are asking us to do something. The average guy back at home who owns the business, who gets up every day to run his company, he's not here saying, hey, don't raise my taxes. And so what ends up happening is we lose perspective at some point. And what they found was the most interesting thing about that time frame or that period in there was the legislatures that were in the longest, whether through special sessions or the longest times of being in session, actually had the highest probability of raising taxes on their citizens. So that, I think, is noteworthy. The other thing is, which I think is just we have to make a decision here, and that is, how easy or hard do you want it to be to pass a bill? I think it should be hard. I think that every time we pass a law, you take away a freedom. And I think that should be a difficult process. Some would argue that this Senate makes it too difficult. You know, I don't agree with that. I think that if your idea has merit, it's noble, and it has the ability to move forward and navigate the raging waters that has become known as the state Senate, our public policy is better because of it. You know, last week I didn't like listening to the senator from the 14th talk about the employment bill like she did. But at the end of the day, I actually believe the bill that we passed out of here is probably better because of the action of the senator from the 14th. She stood there and held the floor, made her points, and as we navigated and negotiated that bill, I actually feel very good that the legislation, now whether it will make it through the House or make it to the governor, I don't know. But I feel good about the way that it passed out of here, that we were, that is in a better perspective, in a better spot because of her actions. And what I would humbly submit is that by shortening the session, all the stuff that we do that we just takes nothing but time in January and February will begin to get cleaned up, because we will know we have X number of days to get serious about this. We'll do it. But the other unintended consequence that I think is actually good for the people of the state is it will be harder to create additional laws, which, in my opinion, more often than not, restrict freedoms. And I think that ultimately, by shortening the session, you actually end up with better government, because only the things of vital importance we will have time to deal with. And so hopefully we will do our due diligence to deal with the things that matter now, and not naming the state grass or the state ice cream or whatever those silly things that we deal with every session.
Senator, I appreciate your comments, and I also appreciate the Senator from the 11th comments as well. It's interesting in listening to his concerns and then contemplating the amendment, the Senator from the 11th brings up this idea that by shortening session that those trying to block things would have to block them for a shorter period of time. But when you think all the way through the amendment that's put forward, what the amendment that put forward actually does is it eliminates a deadline. It creates just one deadline. The last day of session will no longer be the first year of the General Assembly. It'll be that second April in the General Assembly. So to keep citing this example of the Ameren bill that hit our desk with hours to go, I would suggest that the likelihood of that happening in that way would probably go way down. The reason that things like that happen the last day is because we're up against that deadline. And with this amendment, and I'm in favor of the amendment, what it would do is it would say, when you try to do that type of thing, we're going to stop, we're going to spend 7 months understanding what's in this Senate substitute, and the final deadline of each General Assembly will be that final day in April of the second year. So, you know, I appreciate the Senator Levin's comments and his thoughts about making it easier. You know, with this amendment, actually, I think it makes it harder to stop something dead in its tracks.
You know, I think the other thing to note to that point is, you know, I think it's fair to say that in the House, when a bill gets to the floor, whatever they introduce or move through, they already know what it's going to look like. They know what amendments they're going to let on, what amendments they're not going to let on. They have a very strict process through their rules now, which makes it more and more difficult for the average member to be part of the public policy process. The reality is the Senate doesn't have that. And so although there may have been a time when more work was done in the committee process, I would argue that every year that I'm here, more and more of the real substantive debate and changes of legislation are happening on this floor. And sometimes it's slow, sometimes it's challenging. But the reality is although the Senator from the 11th, I think, does raise a good point that on this particular amendment, if everything stays in its current holding pattern, you circumvent that committee process the next year. While that's all valid, as I think about the last few years, I would submit that the majority of the legislative changes that came to any bill happened here. And although there's always a process, and I'm sure there were changes made from when it was introduced to when it ultimately got to the floor, but I mean, how often do we throw Senate subs? I mean, it happens every day. Or almost every day. So, I mean, I actually think that process is still there, and whether the Senator from the 8th Amendment goes on or not, I don't know, but I do believe that the direction that you are trying to take us, I hope, will help create an environment where we stop worrying about the little things that don't matter, and we start talking about the big things that do matter. And I think by shortening the time and focusing everyone because of necessity, we might have the ability to get that done. So I support your bill. I think you're going the right direction, and I want to thank you for the inquiry.
Thank you,
Mr. President.
Senator from Polk, for what purpose do you rise?
To inquire the Senator from the 24th.
Senator, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. As I've kind of listened to the debate on this, I guess I've only been up here a short time, I guess, I'm concerned the political process, but 7 years. But I kind of think Missouri does do things right for the most part. I think we did a lot of good, positive things over the past years. And for the most part, do I get frustrated with the system sometimes? Sure I do. And it wouldn't matter whether you shorten the time or not, that frustration, I still believe it will be there, whether you change the dates or not. All the things that are being discussed, whether it's a ice cream bill or whatever those bills might be, they're still going to be there. Mm-hmm. And I guess what I'm trying to understand from you, is it the process that you don't like? Or is it because if you mentioned the private sector a while ago, if you go in the private sector and you're not running a good business, if you're not efficient, whether you change that from 8 months to 6 months does not solve the problem. You still have the same problems if you're not more efficient at what you do. I guess I'm trying to figure out, is it the process you don't like, the time factor? Or do you think Missouri really is in a bad way? Or
I would suggest that in private sector, those companies that dominate their industry, those that are leading their industry, are constantly focusing on their process. It's not just, so I'm not to suggest that Missouri's failed, that Missouri doesn't do it the right way, but the time we spend here and the order in which, you know, we arrive and leave, that's our process. And, you know, people talk about spending less time down here. Well, physically, maybe less time in Jefferson City, but my expectation would be that we spend a lot longer time on this very Senate floor. That our days might go from 8 to 10 every day that we're here. My understanding in Texas is when they go into, when their General Assembly goes into session, it's lockdown. They work 10, 12, 15-hour days, 5, 6, 7 days at a time. That's their process. There's one other aspect of this that I haven't really discussed so far, and that has to do with, you know, I'm very fortunate that, you know, I have a very full-time job that my employer allows me to come down here and to represent my district and represent my community and be a part of this. But it takes a very generous employer to allow that to happen. So I think that when you look at the potential for broadening the scope of the skill set of those that could actually run for office, that could represent their communities, you create a much broader set of skill sets, people in the private sector, that it'd be more likely that they could contemplate coming and doing exactly what I just did. So that's another aspect of this bill. And in terms of the process of Missouri state government, part of that process is attracting the most qualified people to serve as public servants and to come forward and represent their communities. I mean, you look at, you know, the gentlemen who wrote our Constitution were the most extraordinary business people in their communities. They had tremendous skill sets, and they came together and they did a miraculous thing. And by going to 48 legislative days, I'm not saying that, I still think that most employers would not be as generous as mine, but it would increase the likelihood that some guy or gal out there that has tremendous skills they could bring to bear and that can do a fantastic job of representing their community could actually come down here and be part of this.
Well, if you take the, when you're talking about Texas a while ago, and they have a lockdown, what you say, and they get in there. And believe me, I don't mind working.
I know you don't.
We're working whatever hours we need to work, but we could do that today if we wanted to, without the bill, without yours. I mean,
necessary today.
And that's what I'm saying. Is it really the time factor? What does that change about that? I mean, we could do that today, and if we really did it today, maybe we could get more things accomplished that are good things. Now, maybe we don't. Maybe, like the other senator said, maybe some bad things can happen out of that. But whether it's a short period of time or a long period of time, I think it's our job to try to make sure bad things don't happen.
Of course.
You know, my opinion would be that. I just am trying to figure out, if you're not happy with the procedures, with the way the process works, I get that. But I don't know, short in the time period, how that makes us more efficient.
Well, I mean, in my mind, what I'm suggesting is that we can do the same things we do today or more in a shorter period of time. So, I mean, that is the definition of greater efficiency. You know, to do the same thing in less time, that's being more efficient.
So what I'm suggesting is that I don't think that this won't be a negative to the state. Our senator from the Cape often refers to the net positive, and he always kind of steers his ideas towards net positive. This is neutral at best, net positive at worst. I don't think it's a net negative. So this is a step towards, and look, this is less government, not more government. This is trying to get the citizens more involved, giving them a greater opportunity, given really putting a mandate on us to go and reach out to them in a more consistent way. And, you know, look, all of us, at great personal sacrifice, leave our jobs, leave our families, leave our communities. And if that means we're going to be here from you know, 8 to 10, I mean, some of my most satisfying days have been when at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning we come to a determination on something. I like long days. I mean, I'm an old guy. I'll be 50 this year. I can't sleep past 6:30. You know, you're a little bit older than me. You probably can't sleep past 5:30. You know, let's start early. Let's work all day. And right now, I mean, I think this is a casual pace.
And I have no problem with what you're saying there, because but that's what I'm saying. I think you're more, it almost sounds like you're not happy with the procedural part of it, not the time frame. I don't know. I don't think shortening the time always makes you efficient. I don't really go along with that, because you become efficient because you want to be efficient. And if this body wants to be more efficient, then there's probably steps we can do to do that. But you also, to me, you have to take consideration, and again, go back to private sector. If you're going to eliminate 30 or whatever days it is of the session, what do you do with employees, for example? Because theoretically, they should not get paid the same, because we're not here. The workload's not going to be the same because you're getting more efficient. So you have employees that you're also, you could come into that picture also, I would think. We as legislators, you know, I'm sure if you ask the public, if you're going to work less, should you get paid less?
Because well, Senator, that's, as you know, that's not, less? We don't determine any of those things. We don't determine that. You know, we're in financial duress. We're downsizing government in all shapes and forms. And again, I didn't put this bill forward as a way to reduce the size of government. But if that's an unintended consequence, that's a neutral or a positive. It's not a negative. You know, you say we could do things now. You know, sometimes you need a deadline. What I expect, the interesting aspect of this is I expect it's going to be exciting 2013, 2014, when this body comes together and looks at their rules and their procedures and how they do business. And I could see a scenario where, you know, we're in committee meetings from 8 until 3 every day, and then we go on the floor from 4 until 10 every night. I mean, there are certainly ways for us to be far more productive. But right now, it's kind of like, you know, when you kind of get ready to go to the beach, you know, when you think about working out and getting in shape in November, you don't really care because you're not going to go to the beach until June or July. But, you know, until we actually, and so when you get closer to getting to the beach, then you go out and get yourself in shape, right? So you look a little bit better. It's the same thing. You know, how do you get us to focus on our rules, to improve our process? Well, I'll tell you what, when we know that in 2015 we have 48 legislative days to get it done, then we're going to get a lot more efficient.
Well, I respect you for bringing it forward. I probably just, for one, that don't agree with it, because I don't think it's going to do what you want it to do. And I think some of the things you're wanting to do, we can do in-house if we really wanted to do it. And I think there is other ways that it could be taken advantage of on your side. People here know how to maneuver through the system. You know, does that give them advantage or not? I don't know. But, you know, I'm saying for the most part, the Missouri legislation probably works better than most states in the United States.
I'm not disagreeing.
I truly believe that. And not too long ago, we was only one of 6 states in the United States that was in the black without a tax increase to the people of the state. We have some of the lowest taxes in the country. Now, how that's all happened over the years, and not to say we don't have problems. I mean, the senator from the first, I mean, I hear him when he comes in the budget and he tries to be more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it takes time to be more efficient. And I think things like that have to develop. And I don't know that we're in quite that arena yet, in my opinion, to shorten a session yet. I'm not for sure some of the things that you're not wanting to do, you can't do in-house if we all, as senators, took up on ourselves to maybe work a little longer, maybe work a little harder, maybe address some of these issues. But they're also tough issues because all of a sudden everybody gets on different sides of the table.
I understand.
Some of these issues, and that's what you get into. And so I don't know that shorten the time period makes us more efficient. I want to believe that, and I would like to think that, because I want to be more efficient government. There's many things we can do, but I appreciate you bringing it forward, but it's probably just, I'm not for sure it's the answer.
Well, Senator, I would say, again, this is not any way, shape, or form to put Missouri in its process of the last period of time down. I mean, you can bet dollars to donuts that Apple Computer, which dominates their sector, they meet every day in their process, and they demand that they become more efficient, get the same or better outcomes with less expense, and that's what I'm asking this body to do, is to force itself to become more efficient, to better improve the government that we provide for the citizens of Missouri.
Okay. Thank you for the inquiry.
You're welcome.
Senator from the 15th, what purpose do you rise?
Fire the senator from the 11th.
Senator from the 11th, do you yield?
I yield happily, Mr. President.
He does. Proceed.
That looked a lot like the former senator from the 24th. When she rose, sometimes she would do that thing with her arms like that. I was in the back and didn't hear the full context of your previous debate.
Well, I have a recording of it that I can provide you later and give you some...
I often listen to your recordings.
You drive back, you can, you know, kind of listen to it on tape if you'd like a copy.
I would. I would like to make a formal request for that. I appreciate the sentiment, I think, of the senator from the 8th, but I think the practical effect is I am someone that appreciates, you know, the process, and the process is really important, and how we go about doing things here. And I think that the problem with the amendment is that, and I get the desire for efficiency, I get the desire for results, but how you get to that point is very important.
Senator, you know, I the word efficiency, in business, when the motive is profit, efficiency makes a lot of sense. But, you know, the senator from the first, I listen to him, and we always talk about the forefathers. They didn't design this to be efficient.
I agree with you.
They actually designed it to have checks and balances, which are not efficient sometimes at all.
And in
which
fact,
are designed to stop the other body. You know what's very efficient? And I don't want to overreact to the word. What the most efficient form of government on earth? A dictatorship.
That's right.
You know? No, I mean, you know, a dictatorship is very efficient. You know, Herr Hitler in World War II, you know, was in command of the army in the field, and he reported to himself, and his whole chain of command was him, you know, to where, you know, and I'm just saying, look, I'm just saying the word efficiency, our system is a check and balance.
Yeah,
and it has its frustrations that the senator from Polk talked about. But that's what it's designed to do.
Exactly.
And people have elections, and they come down here, and they send people from different perspectives, and you're supposed to try to hash all that out. And I guess I understand this efficiency, but that's why I wanted to get to, are we talking cost? Well, we're not talking cost. And I don't know that if I were in the majority, you know who I think would love the senator from 24th bill? And I don't think he... maybe designed it this way, the executive branch. If I'm the governor, I like to have that legislature have a very shortened time. So they're not down here to be on the check and balance all the time. You
right.
know? And they
yeah.
love, they what, regardless of who is in the second floor, the executive branch, as not the individual there now, but any individual on the second floor, this empowers at some level, my concern is the executive branch, because you don't have the legislature here, and you have to have somebody have a special committee in the summer. And what always happens, something happens, how many times have you been in this building, where something happens when we're not in session, right? And we have to have all three of those branches agree to have a special session. I mean, we can call ourselves in, that's happened before, but as we well know from this fall, you've got to kind of have everybody sign off on it, right, to make it productive. And how many times have things happened, and we're like going, boy, I wish we were in session. Now, I'm not an advocate of year-round. I'm sure there are states like New York and California that have $100 billion budget, you know, hundreds of billion, you know, whatever, and their needs are whatever. And I don't want to emulate them. But I also don't want to just emulate and do something, quite frankly, for no reason. And the reason is, quite frankly, I read an article and Texas does it. I mean, why don't we go to biannually? There was a reason why we moved from the biannual system, because we wanted our check on the executive branch and the other elements of government to be here.
Well, and there's a filtering process that takes place, too. There's a filtering process of why the committee work is important, too, because for every good bill that's filed, there are five terrible bills that are filed.
The majority of bills filed are terrible.
Right. They shouldn't be passed, and they don't get passed. And how many times
Senator,
do bills
I would
never
argue
get to the floor, and they shouldn't?
From observation, easily 86.4% of your bills are bad.
Well, that might be right. And that might be better than the average senator. I don't know. but I think...
That's,
you know,
better than the 99% from the senator from Polk.
Right. You're saying he has the highest average of that. But, you know, I think as somebody that has been on both sides of that, things I wanted passed that didn't pass, or things that I didn't want passed that passed, the process is really important. And, you know, I'll echo the sentiments that were previously articulated here. Last week was an important process. It was instructive in that, look, that's the number one bill out of the chute, right? It's
right.
Something we've talked about for a couple years. The senator from the 14th believed very passionately in what she was talking about. And I learned a lot about her in that. And
we found genuine...
Only 34 of us. And when we get out here and we're able to debate the important issues today, we are really a proxy for 6 million people.
Right.
And sometimes that takes time. Now, that isn't to say that that's an excuse for not getting things done, but I think an appreciation for how we get this done. And ultimately, at the end of the day, people working on a compromise to get something out of here that works better is what this place is all about. And this place was designed very differently to that place. And this is not a slam, and particularly for the people who serve them, this is not, it's just the function of how we were set up.
Yeah, it's a different function.
And the founders believed very specifically that the only successful democracies that have really ever lasted, stood the test of time, had a strong and powerful Senate, whether it's advise and consent, whether it was when Jefferson didn't like what the first judges were ruling on. And there was a moment in which they were going to impeach those judges. The Senate was the body that said no. When FDR wanted to pack the court, and that flew out of the House, the Senate stood up and said no.
Right.
The Senate is supposed to be that buffer, that dam against sometimes the tyranny, not only of authority, but of the majority. And we have to take that responsibility very seriously. So anytime there's something that we're seeing here, I think that makes it, and I'm not saying it's wrong because it makes it easier to pass, but my specific objection with this amendment is that, let's say you get something at the end of the legislative session, it's automatically on the calendar
right.
When you come back. Look, the senator from Lawrence states this at the beginning of the Judiciary Committee hearing every time. And you know what, until he said it, it didn't really dawn on me. This is the only opportunity that the people from across the state have an opportunity to be heard.
Right.
Is that committee process. And things change. Things change. When we're here 4.5 months a year, things change. In fact, we're going to get into a debate, I think, about legislative days to file bills. And I think that there ought to be a limit, a reasonable limit. But here we are in legislative day 17 or 18, the senator from the 24th files a bill about a really offensive overreach of the president and an offense to Roman Catholics. Okay, and you can agree or disagree with this, but what's happening with forcing these religious institutions to abandon their constitutionally protected freedom? Now, if we have a strict limit on when that can be filed, that bill doesn't even get filed.
And see, that Senator, that goes back to my point. You're talking about amendment, but the base bill is the same problem, which is, you know, this is a check and balance in the system, to the courts, to the executive branch, and you diminish us. You drain our authority.
Mr. President, will you lay that bill over?
Three senators standing. That bill will be laid over. Senator from the 23rd.
President, without objection, Senate will go to the order of business of announcements.
Senator from Boone.
want to remind everybody in the Appropriations Committee that we did take a recess before we came out on the floor today, and we will be picking back up the budget for higher ed about 10 minutes after we walk out of the chamber here on adjournment.
Mr. President.
Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics will have a hearing at 1 p.m. in the Senate lounge.
Further announcements? Further announcements? Seeing none, Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. No further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand adjourned under the rules.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. We are adjourned under the rules.